WBAI.org and consider becoming a sustaining member, a WBAI buddy, for as little as $10 a month. That's $10 a month. You know what? I think I said for as little as $10 a week earlier. And, you know, that was a little bit of a pas a faux. But, you know, if you can afford $10 a week, that's good. But it's $10 a month. You can become that WBAI buddy. 9 a.m. coming up next, Global Movements, Urban Struggles.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, August 18, 2015. The program is Global Movements, Urban Struggles. I'm your host, Rob Robinson.
And I'm Donald Thompson.
Good morning, Donald. How you doing, brother?
Pretty good, pretty good. We're here, members of CNPR and Community News Production Institute, and it's good to be here, Global Movements, Urban Struggles. I think we got a pretty decent lineup today.
Yeah, I'm dealing with a little bit of a cold this morning, so I hope our listeners can deal with me. I may have to back away from the mic from time to time because I am not feeling well at all. I'm up here perspiring, going through the chills. It's kind of bad. All right, Donald, you don't have to slide that far away. But before we go forward, I want to give a shout-out, Donald. I think you won this. We had an email conversation with somebody who taught us this craft, right? And it was fascinating. And Deepa Fernandez, who used to host Wake Up Club here over WBAI, got involved in an email discussion with us earlier this week. And it was nice to hear from Deepa. She has moved out to the West Coast. And I believe she's working for BBC, correct, as a reporter?
Not too sure exactly who she's working for, but the connection was so strange. It was, I hit an old list.
Right.
And she was on the list, and she was surprised that we were still in existence. But it's WBAI. We hang on by all means necessary.
Exactly. So I just want to give a big shout-out to Deepa Fernandez and to her sister, Sujatha Fernandez, who is here in New York. She teaches at the CUNY Grad Center. I also have a working relationship with her. These are two dynamite sisters that work in the social justice movement. And, you know, Deepa, it continues. Your legacy is still going strong. We're here once a week from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So big shout out to Deepa Fernandez.
Yeah, and again, Robbie being kind of modest and maybe humble, but Rob has been nominated. I guess you got the award from, was it Human Rights?
U.S. Human Rights Network.
You and a whole bunch of colleagues, which is pretty good. When is that ceremony anyway?
That will be in December around Human Rights Day. December 10th is International Day of Human Rights. I believe the event will take place, the award ceremony, the 8th through the 12th will be in Texas. It'll happen in Texas. But it was, Donald, that was a big surprise. I actually found out while I was in Brazil. And, you know, I never did this work thinking about accolades and, you know, trying to get applause from what I'm doing. You do the work because it needs to be done, right?
And you're right in the moment.
Right. And it's nice when people recognize what you're doing. And for me, it was a revelation because, in all honesty, you know my personal story. 10 years ago, I was hiding in a school bus from Hurricane Katrina down in Miami, Florida. I was homeless on the streets of Miami, and I found refuge in a vacant school bus while that storm was rocking that bus back and forth. And here I am just on a trip back from Brazil and receiving this award. So it's real humbling. And
one of the connections also, as you mentioned, Katrina, another colleague of mine is being honored by that same human rights folks, right. Colette Pinchon.
Right.
And she's pushing forward the 10th anniversary of Katrina, but it's Gulf States rising. It's a definitely alternative to the mainstream or lamestream celebrations.
I know these folks very well, and I will be a part of that work. You know, Katrina really resonates with me because I always thought about myself. I was a single man trying to deal with this. But what about those families that were running from all that water, right? I stayed in the school bus, and it was rocking back and forth. You know, I said my prayers, whatever. I woke up in the morning, everything was calm. But down in New Orleans, along the Gulf Coast, those folks went through hell, man. They went through real hell.
We covered, years ago, we covered folks who moved up here, who were relocated up here years ago.
And that's where my strong connection came with those folks. I worked with a former union activist from DC 37, Brenda Stokely. We did a commemoration march on the Lower East Side on the 5-year anniversary. So, you know, it's real strong connections to those folks in Katrina. So, but again, it is nice to receive that award, and accolades are always nice, but you don't do the work for recognition. But I will not lie, it is nice to be recognized. And my email is buzzing with people saying congratulations, so it's a real good feeling.
Yeah. Well, look, before we digress, today's show is going to cover some of your trip over in Brazil and speaking to some of the folks that you met, and also following on or maybe connected to one of the programs that came on, one of the segment that came on earlier in regards to surveillance. So after news break, you know, and we get into the program.
Yeah, we'll have a couple of live guests over the phone, and we'll have a pre-recorded interview. The interview is with Lara Ali, who is with Levante, popular youth uprising in Brazil. Lara happens to be in New York right now. She's taking English as second language courses and meeting with grassroots organizations around the city and learning about the struggles here in the U.S. Dynamite young lady with an incredible analysis, but you know, you'll hear in the interview, you know, her analysis. I think she's somebody that's pretty special to me. And I, you know, once I found out she was coming here, I'm happy to have her. I've been taking her around the city the last couple of days to meet folks. And that'll continue for the next couple of months. And then, you know, somebody both you and I work with, Alfredo Lopez from May 1st People Link. We call the organization People's Technology for the Movement. And, you know, Alfredo drills us a lot about surveillance and using corporate email services, and you know, I think Alfredo's going to have some interesting things to say following what you heard earlier on Democracy Now! So we'll move quickly to some headlines from Washington, D.C. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump continued his attack on immigrants. Speaking Sunday on NBC's news program Meet the Press, Trump offered his thoughts in a 39-minute interview on a wide range of topics. Trump's vision on how to secure American borders included the following, saying that he would push to end the constitutionally protected citizenship rights of children and any family living illegally inside the U.S., making Mexico pay for a permanent border wall, mandatory deportation of all criminal aliens, and tripling the force of immigration offices by eliminating tax credit payments to immigrant families residing illegally in the U.S. Trump's plan, which was published on his website, was endorsed by Senator Jeff Sessions, a Republican from Alabama, who chairs a Senate subcommittee on immigration.
Yeah, and just quickly, you know, the way we're doing this, I'll just drop some comments. I don't even think we should even comment on Trump, but I guess we have to. A whole bunch of stuff that he's saying here in terms of to end the constitutionally protected citizenship rights of children. You know, like if anybody take up Trump, he'll be laughed off the stage. Just, right. You cannot change that. It's an amendment that made that. And at the end of the stuff, because, you know, it's immigration stuff that we do, people need to pay attention. If you are paying attention or even concerned about this issue, Jeff Sessions from Alabama, the Republican, is not a pleasant piece of work when it comes to immigrants. Definitely not. And for him to be even endorsing this is no surprise to people in the immigrants' rights movement.
Absolutely. I'm in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Julian Bond, a charismatic figure of the 1960s civil rights movement and a lightning rod of the Vietnam War campaign and a lifelong champion of equal rights, notably as chairman of the NAACP, died on Saturday night in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Bond was 75. Bond, known as an original leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, eventually became a leader of the NAACP. He also served for 20 years in the Georgia General Assembly, mostly in inconspicuous isolation from white colleagues who saw him as an interloper and a rabble-rouser. Mr. Bond became a founder with Morris Dees of the Southern Poverty Law Center, a legal advocacy organization in Montgomery, Alabama. Mr. Bond was its president from 1971 to 79 and remained on its board for the rest of his life. Southern Poverty Law Center does some dynamite work. I have a strong connection with those folks. It's a young lady that's working with me on some of the Brazil stuff. So, And Tianjin, China. Beijing on Monday ordered a nationwide check on workplace safety to correct all irregularities 5 days after a huge explosion at a warehouse in the port city of Tianjin killed 114 people and left 70 people missing. The director from the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology lamented the frequency of fatal workplace incidents and demanded a thorough national inspection on all safety risks. The death toll includes at least 21 firefighters, making the disaster the deadliest for Chinese firefighters in more than six decades. And their toll could go much higher because 64 remain missing. About 1,000 firefighters responded to the disaster. Here in New York, the city council passed a bill last Wednesday that aims to clean up car washes by requiring businesses to get licenses from the city. After years of complaints from workers who say their wages were stolen in an aggressive campaign to unionize the businesses, the council voted 43-7 for the bill that would subject car washes to checks and make sure they follow labor laws and environmental laws. Businesses will have to get their licenses at a cost of $550 every 2 years from the Department of Consumer Affairs, and the city could deny permits to those found to have a history of violations. Owners would have to take out a $150,000 bond to cover lawsuits they might face, but the number would drop to $30,000 for unionized shops. Backers say the mandate is necessary because owners have skipped out on judgments against them. But owners are incensed, calling it a thinly veiled ploy to force them to accept unionization or pay bond fees they can't afford.
Tough.
Exactly. Life is terrible for some, right? And finally, in New York City, in a related matter, some New York cleaners have lost their jobs with a chance at hire, but they say it's a dirty deal. The workers' employer, Commercial Building Maintenance, ended its contract with the Manhattan-based company WeWork barely a week after employees demanded better wages. Their last day will be Sunday. WeWork decided not to use the contractors any longer, but to hire workers directly. The $10 billion company invited the commercial building employees, some of whom have been cleaning their offices for more than a year, to fill out job applications. Although the new offer is a much better deal, the salary is still way below what unionized janitors make. Also, the workers, most of whom are Latino immigrants, fear it sets some unfair barriers like the new ability to communicate in English requirement. A group of 10 workers who were accompanied by State Senator Brad Holderman went to WeWork offices on Wednesday to turn in their job applications in person. Despite Hoyleman's presence, security guards turned them back at the door. The company is expanding, and we hope English requirement is not used as a pretext to hire some workers, said Rachel Cohen, an organizer for the Service Employees International Union, Local 32BJ, which has been helping the workers articulate their demands. We think all of the workers should be able to keep their jobs, to unionize, and to be paid prevailing wage of $18 an hour. I'm sure we'll have more on this story in future broadcasts. So when we come back, we hear an interview with Lira Ali, who is an organizer with Labanchi, popular youth uprising in Brazil. Stay tuned. This is Urban Movements, Global Movements, Urban Struggles, over 99.5 WBAI FM in New York.
A igrejinha faz belém brimblom. Posso me dissolver, quem tá na área se liga no som. Deu meia-noite, o galo já cantou. Se eu tranca a rua, que é o dono da gira. O corre gira que o pum mandou. Lealdade, humildade, procedimento e respeito.
Aqui é o Ocidente Zulu, São Paulo, Zona Sul, resgatando o que estava no fundo do baú. É rap de raiz, pode acreditar, o som que o DJ agora lembrou de tocar. Rap em hood sou eu, sujeito homem, eu tô com o microfone, é tudo no meu nome. Sou Ocidente Zulu, se ligar no som, eu sou negrão, certo, sangue bom. Tá ligado?
Diz aí.
Deixa comigo que eu não mando recado. Rapaziada da área que não deixa falha e nem dá mancada. E nenhuma quebrada fazendo por merecer. Mantendo o seu proceder, atitude e firmeza. Que Deus ajude vocês, vou dizer. Pra segurar essa onda só mesmo natural. De rolê com os aliados é só fita de mil graus.
Mão na cabeça, mano, não vou lhe deixar saída. Até você se ligar, ver a real da vida.
Não adianta correr que eu estarei ali, apontando seus erros até você me ouvir.
E entender que não... não é bem assim. Que eu preciso de você, você precisa de mim. Pois juntos viveremos, conviveremos. Então por que, meus irmãos, tanto atrito temos? Vivemos num mundo cheio de hipocrisia. Tudo isso se vê no nosso dia a dia. Das pessoas que correm eternamente atrás de um ideal. Tudo isso por um mísero real. Irmão matando irmão por causa de migalha. Estamos vivendo em pleno campo de batalha, no fio da navalha. Não há medalhas a quem vencer. Então por que, me diz? Pra que guerra, irmão, se pode viver em paz? Pode viver em paz.
Here we're back. Global Movements, Urban Struggles. You're just listening to a piece that Love brought back from Brazil. It's called Revolução by José Mendes Zulu, the last mixtape. And yeah, well, beautiful music.
I heard that in Brazil, Don. I couldn't get enough of it. And last night, I had the complete album, so, you know, I'm not great at editing, so I'm bugging Carlos like at 11 o'clock. You got to edit it down. Cut out everything but the first 6 minutes 52, man. So it's a dynamite piece, and I think it's a great introduction to our first piece this morning. Is an interview with Lyra Ali, who is a national coordinator for Levante, popular youth uprising in Brazil. One of the things that's happening in Brazil, there's an attempt by the leader of the Congress right now to lower the age of incarceration from 18 years of age to 16 years of age. So we actually met Lyra our first weekend there at a protest in the center of the city. She was working with some students, and they were protesting this, and there were about 5,000 people that turned out 6 o'clock at night to do a big protest rally through the center of the city. So we're going to bring in Lyra now and just listen to this interview.
First, let me ask you, tell me a little bit about Levante. What is this organization about?
Levante is a national social movement. We are organized in all the country. It's a big country, Brazil, and we organize the young people to fight for your rights. So we organize the young people in the schools, in the university, in the neighbors from periferia, and this word is internationalized from Brazil, yeah. We organize the young people because we believe with political education and with fight, the young people can change the world.
Perfect. And change. Stop.
The Brazil and, well, build a better society.
And how many states are in the country of Brazil?
26 plus the federal district.
Okay, and how many does Levante organize in?
26 plus the district,
so
the federal district.
All over the country. Pretty impressive. We're at a time now, you see around the world, where young people are rising up, but there's a consciousness that has been raised with young folks. And we had a little conversation before we started doing this interview about self-esteem and a change that has taken place over the last 10 years. Tell us a little bit about some of those changes.
The young people in Brazil now can dream. We have the basic needs before we don't have in Brazil. Okay. Access to food, to education, to house and all of things. And now we say the young people can dream with universities, can dream with better jobs, and that change the way the young people see yourself. So the black people today have black hairs. The women fight to can stay in the street using the clothes.
Any way they want to dress,
yeah.
Any way they feel is appropriate.
Yeah, and these things are changed, and the young people have more power to say what we need, what we like, what we can do.
But Lyra, at the same time that these changes are happening, there's still a constant in Brazil that compares a lot to the U.S., and that's the number of people of color in prison. Tell us about some of the numbers of people that are in prison in Brazil.
Today in Brazil, like 95%, 95% of the incarcerated people are black, and the most part are young black between the 18 and 29 years, because the politics from the state isn't just incarcerated, but is a politics who kills the black young people. In 30,000 people was killed in Brazil, and like 80% was black, was young black people.
Several thousand people took to the streets of Sao Paulo, right, to protest against a new proposed law. Tell us about this proposed law that is coming up right now.
That law is just for criminalizing more and more the young and the black people. We know isn't a law for decrease the violence. They saw that we have a violence problem in Brazil, and we need to put the people in jail. But we know that isn't the answer for the violence. The violence exists because we have a social inequality, access to education, to health, to moradia,
housing.
And so that build the violence. And the answer to the violence for us isn't the incarceration for the people. We have a problem because we know if you put the young people in the prison, really don't resolve the problem, because the young people in Brazil is responsible for less 1% for the crimes, and the young people in Brazil is the most affected by the violent crimes. So the murders, like 60%.
60%.
60% of the murders are young people. Wow. So we don't need put in jail, we need protect the young people. Today, the Brazilian politics don't listen the people, we don't understand the people. So we need manifest our opinion, yeah? And the streets is the where we can do that.
We always say in the U.S. that's the only place we make social change. Tell us about some of the groups you've already worked with in the United States, some of the organizations.
In Levante, we believe the international articulation from youth people is very important, because we believe the problems the youth people have in all the world is like the same. Is the violence from the police, is the problem with the media, who manipulate everything and use everything for the capital, is the propriety in destruction of the
nature.
And well, the problems is the same. So we articulated now with the Dream Defenders, with the people of Ferguson, and we are open to build many relationships with organizations for United States, because we really believe the imperialism is enemy very strong. It's fundamentally very important to fight against imperialism.
That was Lera Ali, a national coordinator from Brazil with Levante Popular Youth Uprising. For 26 years old, I think the analysis is incredible of that young lady, and I think some folks here in New York City and beyond are going to learn a lot from her as she travels around the country. As I said earlier, before we entered the piece, she is here in the New York area. This morning she's taking English as a second language in Queens, but we will get her here live in the studio on a future broadcast to just talk about a bunch of things happening in Brazil. I just think her perspective is incredible, and I think, you know, even somebody, an elder like myself, can learn from somebody young like that, Donna. I think she's incredible. So
I like her last statement. Yeah. The problem is imperialism.
Yeah, and, you know, it was funny. She said she used to reject learning English as a second language because it was thought of as the bourgeoisie language and the language of imperialism in Brazil. And she said she sat down with one gentleman who, you know, an elder, and she started talking to him, and she says, well, what do you think Portuguese is? You learn Portuguese, right? It's an imperialist language, right? And she said, I had a rude awakening. She said, okay, I'm on a mission now. So she decided at that point that she's going to come to the U.S. for 3 months and learn English as a second language. Really an incredible young lady, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from her. So that was Lira Ali. When we return, we'll speak with Joelle Robinson, no relation to this reporter, but she is a member of U.S. Friends of Mabi and attended that Brazil exchange with me most of July. And we'll have Joelle live. You're listening to Global Movements, Urban Struggles over 99.5 WBAI FM in New York City.
Uno, dos, uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
See that black boy over there?
Global Movements, Urban Struggles, and of course that was the one and only, well, have to say unfortunately not with us anymore, Gil Scott here in the bottle. Also just want to make sure that we give credit where credit is due. The previous pre-recorded interview was produced by, well, interviewed by Rob Robinson, but also cut and mixed and do all the kind of thing that Carlos Pereira does so well. So Carlos, again, much thanks, and don't forget, this is Global Movements Urban Struggle, collective of Community News Production, Inc.
And I just I want to follow that up. That interview was not an easy interview to do. You know, Lyra is conscious that she doesn't speak English well. She speaks English well enough, I think, to conduct an interview, but you have to push people like that sometimes. At the same time, you want to get information from them, so you can only push so far. But I was lucky enough to have Yara Freitas, who is a national coordinator with MOBI, the Movement of People Affected by Dams in Brazil. And as people heard the interview, you can hear Yara in the background explaining a couple of words to him. So one of the experiences we had down there, Donald, was just being flanked constantly everywhere we went by people who were fluent in English. That was something that they made sure happened everywhere we went. Somebody was fluent in English and fluent in Portuguese so that the translation always worked and we can conduct these interviews. I think that's important. So it's been something I've been very conscious of as I've been working with, working with Lara and taking her around the city. She's trying to learn English, but at the same time, you want to make sure that, you know, there's a young lady of Brotherhood Sister Soul who is from, has Brazilian roots and she speaks Portuguese, so has been able to support her.
Isn't it kind of crazy that she's chosen New York to come and learn English? Because, you know, you go up in Harlem, you're going to hear different kind of English. You go down in Brooklyn, there's all kinds of
English. What was cool about that, she's conscious of that. She says, I know it's not going to be perfect English. I know about New York and people are coming from all over the world, but I think it's a place to learn. She equated it to Sao Paulo, where she's from, right? Different people, a large urban center where people migrate into. So she's very conscious of that. So, you know, I think, you know, her personality is real outgoing. She's charismatic. So I can't wait to bring her in the studio here. Yeah, we were hoping to have Joelle Robinson, who went to Brazil with me, on for an interview. But we're having a little trouble contacting her. But we do have May 1st People Link. Alfredo Lopez is a longtime collaborator with Social Movements. He's one of the founders of May 1st People Link. Donald and I both have worked with May 1st People Link in a number of fronts. Many of our organizations use May 1st People Link as our internet provider and service provider. They host our websites. We use their email exchange. And they speak a lot to us about technology and technology for the movement. They're known as a technology for the movement organization. But I think what's more important is Alfredo, and he comes out of a long line of Puerto Rican struggle, understanding social justice in a way that a lot of us don't. And he's been a person to learn a lot from. Him and his partner, Maritza, I've gleaned quite a bit of information from. So without further ado, Alfredo Lopez, good morning, brother.
Good morning, Rob and Don. I'm pinching myself because I have the unmitigated honor to be talking to the United States Human Rights Network Movement Builder Award winner, Rob Robinson.
Don,
and you're lucky enough to be in the studio with him.
I'm sitting right next beside him.
It's, Alfred, we spoke about it a little bit earlier. It's an incredible honor, and you know, I just say I'm very humbled when it comes to this stuff. Right, you don't enter this work looking for awards and accolades, but it is nice to be recognized. And you know, I always have these revelations. 10 years ago, and you know, Katrina is coming up. I was on the streets of Miami shaking a cup, begging for coins to get something to eat. And you know, with the blessings of God or whoever, whatever you believe in. You know, I'm here doing a radio show. I've traveled all over the world, so it's been an incredible journey. But it's also nice to have people recognize us. So thank you. And thank you for getting up a little early. I know you're not a morning person. So
I am not, no. No, so, this is me. I'm pretty much catatonic right now, but, you know.
Even in that state, we know we're going to get to the point and get the issues also.
Absolutely. So, Donald, listen, this is what happens when you know people well and you mix up names. So earlier on WBAI, Democracy Now! Was on, and they were talking about surveillance and the NSA and AT&T, and it got me to thinking, you know, May 1st People Link is movement technology. Tell us a little bit about what May 1st People Link is, and then we'll go into some serious questions, because after that, after what I heard on Democracy Now!, I have some stuff I want to drop on you.
Well, we're a membership organization of the left-wing and social justice movements of the United States and Mexico. That means that our members are democratically involved in the organization, vote for its leadership, vote for its basic program. We try to act like a union or any other kind of larger membership organization. Except that we concentrate on internet work, and we do that in two different ways. In one way, our members share our resources, which means basically folks pay dues, in exchange for those dues, they get a bunch of internet services for free, which include unlimited websites, as many websites as you want and need, unlimited email accounts, unlimited email list. There's no limit to any of the services, because the policy or philosophy of the organization is these are all movement people. What they need to do their work, they need. And so all people do is, you know, pay the dues, which is $100 for an individual, $200 for an organization on a yearly basis. And they, they get these shared resources. But in addition, as an organization, we participate in the movement and all kinds of campaigns. While the three of us, the three musketeers who are in this conversation, are all members and you know, we participate in the sharing of resources, most of what Donald Rob, yourself, and myself do together, most of the contact we have is actually through movement work, various major coalition efforts, all kinds of campaigns, etc. May 1st does that stuff. When it dwells, and you know, for the most part, this dwells on issues affecting the internet. Well, we just mentioned a huge one, the surveillance issue, but there are many others. Movement stuff in general, because the movement's use of internet technology is so extensive right now.
Right.
That's basically what we do. We're the movement's technology organization, and we have about 850 members, including 550 of which were organizations, in the United States and Mexico.
Okay.
We're one of the few organizations left of this country with a huge Mexico membership. About 20% of our members work and live in Mexico right now. The work we do in both of those places kind of tends to reflect the struggles in both those places as much as is possible. And so, you know, because there's so many of these members organizations have members in their own right. Our family is about between 2,500 and 2,700 activists in both places. That's what the Make First People Link membership really is.
Okay, let me jump in here, Alfredo. For our listeners that aren't technical savvy. We were talking off air, engineer Michael G. Haskins, Donald, and myself, about internet surveillance and some of the things we heard on Democracy Now! Program, which preceded our program. One of the things you've drilled me about is not using corporate technology. Why is that important? One, tell me why. And you've done a great job of chasing me away from some of that corporate technology, but tell me why.
Well, I mean, there are many, many reasons. There are politically principled reasons, et cetera. In relationship to emails, the first primary reason, or the first thing people need to know, is that for the most part, corporate email providers are government agencies, even though they're dressed up. And I'm not saying that in a kind of a snarky way. I'm not trying to be mean in saying that. That is a reality. They collaborate with the government. They provide information. They turn over most of their information to the government. That's a fact. And we've seen with the recent news about Verizon's collaboration with the United States spying agencies, just how much that happens. But no one questions this. If you use Gmail, your email is being captured by the United States government, and then it is being evaluated. It's stored, it's evaluated, it's processed. It is, if necessary, if they deem necessary, if you're suspicious, and almost everyone listening to us today, right now, is suspicious in the government's eyes. When we read this news, oh, well, they only take certain people, they only look at certain people. That is true, but the criteria they use in examining who to investigate is met by just about every left-wing person in this country.
Why is May 1st People Links technology better?
Well, because we don't do that. Okay. We don't turn over anything to the government. Whenever the government comes after us, and by the way, that's perpetual. It's forever. I mean, we have, I just got out of one gag order. I mean, we have constant gag orders, constant demands for information and constant hassle. And we're constantly battling them. We have a almost full-time relationship with the Environmental Frontier Foundation, EFF, which is our lawyers. There's, a constant struggle going on. To keep the integrity of our members' information, and we pay attention to that. Most companies don't, so that's one difference. That's a huge difference right there. There's something else, though. I mean, in talking about corporate software and free and open source software and all of this. It's really important for people to realize that on the internet, the basis of the internet, all of the so-called servers that are used, and all the software used in delivering the fundamental services, web services and email, all of that stuff is free and open source. The internet was developed as a free and open source expression. That means that anyone can read the source of it, and that for the most part, it is free to those who want to use it. And that's very, very important, because that is the fundamental culture of the internet. The internet is effectively a community values the individuals, the collaborative work of people, doesn't try to charge people a huge amount of money for every single thing that it does. And it also opens up the code so that the world can contribute to it. It is the world that we want to design, or that we want to build, in a microcosm. It is that designed social structure. And so we have those, not only do we have those basic services, that basic software running the internet, but just about every kind of piece of software you use that you pay some company for there is an alternative that's free and open source. And so, you know, we try to, from a political point of view, encourage the use of this material because it does basically meet the political culture that we as a social justice organization are part of. So, you know, those are the two basic reasons in a nutshell as to why you should. But, I mean, it's really critically important now that people be conscious of the fact when you're using that Gmail, that stuff goes straight to the government, and they admit that. I do a lot of meetings with Google people, you know, where we appear at meetings together and stuff, and they will tell you we are under hundreds and hundreds of federal court orders where we have to turn over almost everything.
Alfredo, we get that. So then how does May 1st prevent their information from being grabbed off the internet? If there are court orders out there and you're accessing all these lines, how do you prevent the information that's going through May 1st email servers? Yeah. How do you protect that from being grabbed by those same forces?
Well, there are a couple of different ways that we try to do it. Remember, it's a battle, and you're battling the United States government. The United States government's a pretty hefty lift. You know, you just can't just, you don't flick a hand in the face of the U.S. government and win. It's a battle. But so that when email leaves us, see, here's the problem, Rob, which is, I've had this conversation with you personally many, many times. You know, we can protect you, but if you're sending an email to a person who uses Gmail, which I personally do hundreds of times a day, literally, that email is going to be picked up by the government because it's going to someone with a Gmail address. So we cannot protect that. We can't help that from happening. Right. Once that goes to the Gmail account, that's eaten up by the government.
Right.
We, however, do a couple of things. First of all, we have our own data protection schemes to prevent the government from coming in and scooping out of the server, which they do a lot. You know, they have ways of coming into your servers and taking material out and taking data out.
Right.
And they do this routinely to a lot of different providers worldwide. And we have ways that our data is protected. So when you have data on our servers, it's protected. They can't get to it. They can't read it. And, you know, there's a famous story of the FBI physically seizing one of our servers a couple of years ago. They went into one of the colocation centers where we have our servers, and they pulled the server out. They just took it out because we weren't giving them the information they wanted. And a few days later, they had to put the server back in because they couldn't read a darn thing on the server. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
So we have that going for us. We have that ability. That's one of the things that we do. And then the other thing is we just resist the court orders.
Okay.
So when there's a court order and everybody else capitulates and says, okay, let's turn over the information, May 1st does not turn over information to the government. Period. We don't do it. And, you know, that can end where it ends. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, we have never had a case where we have turned over information to the government.
Alfredo, can you stick around a little bit? We want to ask you, May 1st is going through a problem right now with something called denial of service.
Yes.
And we'd like to get a little more information. We are listening to Alfredo Lopez. He's live with us. This is Global Movement's Urban Struggles. We're going to be back with more on May 1st People Link and follow up with Alfredo on the denial of service after this brief music break.
Yes, this is the ghetto. Showing up now. Mm-hmm.
great Donnie Hathaway with his Monster Jam in the Ghetto. You're listening to Global Movement's Urban Struggles over 99.5 FM. We have Alfredo Lopez of May 1st People Inc. on the line.
Yeah, Alfredo, before we get too deep into it, a couple of things. Rob had mentioned the issue that May 1st People's Link are going through right now in terms of the denial of service issue. Right. If you can speak to that briefly, but also, what can we do? Because I know about encryption, not to the fullest, I know of, don't totally understand it. And also, the push right now for the coding, the We Code, I think a lot of mainstream and lamestream folks are into that, but if you could help out and break that down to us, why it's important that people code. In that order.
Okay. Well, we are under a denial, the longest and most ferocious denial of service attack in our history. A denial of service attack is essentially that using a particular kind of software, a person or people will repeatedly hit your service with a particular request. In other words, for example, request a particular website. And that floods the server with requests more than it can handle. It's like almost the mouth of a river getting clogged up, flooding, and the server is unable to respond at some point, and it shuts down, and then that has an epidemic effect because. As it shuts down, the other servers that are connected to it begin to shut down. And this denial of service attack that we're under currently, some of them come from one computer, but this is a distributed denial of service attack. What that means that a bunch of different computers are attacking us simultaneously. Now, why did this happen? This started happening more than 2 weeks ago. Why did this happen? There is a member of May 1st People Inc. called the National Network of Abortion Funds, which is, as its name implies, a network that funds smaller abortion programs, etc. the National Network was one of the abortion sites, pro-choice sites, as they're called, that were shut down during the Planned Parenthood attacks. When the Congress was about to discuss the defunding of Planned Parenthood, right-wingers went crazy attacking these sites supporting reproductive rights. So that was a member of May 1st People Inc. That huge attack brought all of our system down. We take measures and steps to bring them back up. We have things we do. They're not the only ones who know how to do some of these things.
Exactly.
We know how to do a lot of things. And we brought our techies over the period of about a day, brought all of our members back online, including the National Network, and we were able to protect its site using a service called Deflect that, offered by an organization in Equalities in Canada. That will help you fend off these kinds of denial of service attacks. So we used that. And when that happened, the attackers went bonkers and focused their attack on us. So they started attacking all the May 1st websites. They took May 1st website itself offline, and then they turned around and started attacking other parts of our operation, which could threaten the entire operation of the organization. I had never seen them do that before. They attacked what was called our DNS system. And we have had to fight that off. We have a number of different ways of fighting it off. And we got a huge amount of support. We needed some money to do a few things. To get our members back online and protect our members more effectively. And our own members responded with adequate donations to allow us to do that. So that membership response, which demonstrates that our members really believe they're members. I mean, it shows how much our members actually support us. was able to that with that response, we were able to protect most of our operation.
Hey,
however,
Alfredo,
for a
I'm
bunch
sorry.
Of reasons, we are not able. Our website is still offline, and we're still getting hit with attacks that we have to fend off. So our techies have been working consistently over the last several, over the last now, it's going to be 3 weeks at the end of this week.
Yeah. Well, look, Fredo, you know how media is, and we're definitely tight on the time and running out of time. But so we'll just skip a couple of the questions. But the encryption, if you can, real quick, how much time we got? About maybe 2 minutes, a minute? Yeah,
right.
But either which way, but we won't even get into it. But again, just shout out the importance of encrypting, because you said early on most of our stuff get read. What does encryption do?
Encryption basically garbles your message. It translates the language of your message into something that's not normally readable, not human readable. And then when it arrives at the hands of somebody else who has a specific key, an encryption key, they can decrypt it and read it. And why that's important is because the government and people who are stealing information steal it while it's on its way between two people.
Gotcha. Okay.
So if they do that with an email that's encrypted, they can't read a single word of it.
Alfredo, we're just out of time. We appreciate you getting up early and coming on. Donald and I are sitting here feeling kind of honored. We got Alfredo Lopez on the radio early in the morning.
Oh, we have to get you back on for a conversation.
Yeah, this is a bigger conversation that requires more time, and we'd love to bring you back on. So thank you for getting up a little bit earlier with us. We have to back out now. This is Global Movement Urban Struggles over 99.5 FM. I'm Rob Robinson along with Donald Athinason. We'd like to thank our producer, Carlos Pareja, and engineer, Michael G. Haskins. On the phone with us is Alfredo Lopez of May 1st People Link. Lira Ali did the interview with us. She's here from Brazil. Hopefully we'll get her in the studio live. For all of us at the Community News Production Institute, I'm Rob Robinson.
And I'm Donald Thompson. And also just giving a shout out to the other producers, Tamar Meyer and Michelle Alamadi. Hope you guys are doing good, and we'll be here next week Tuesday.
For all of us at the Community News Production Institute, here's wishing for peace in the Middle East. We be out.
Check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
Wake up to the morning show on WBAI.
Tar sands fuel is some of the dirtiest fuel on the planet. It's 17% more greenhouse gas intensive than regular crude, which means every barrel you burn is even worse for the climate. Scientists have referred to it as the fuel to the largest carbon bomb.
For a different take on what's happening in the city, the nation, and our world.
The reality often in certain things trumps kind of the perception the media is putting out, and they're parading that kind of perception only deepens the resolve, I think, of many to fight back. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing.
Tune into the morning show, Monday through Fridays from 6 to 8 a.m.
What we're seeing is that there is wide-scale concern about